Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Happy to be with you this weekend. Always a blast to be on the air with you all. And the Silk or Joe Show is a Main Street Radio Network production, so we want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist. And you can go show them some love at mainstreetradionetwork.com. And we do want to thank them a lot because sometimes their clients and even management don't like the content on the show, but the company has our backs anyway. We appreciate that. Also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this program. The Silk or Joe Show in its 10th year now. Actually, we're about to be in our 11th year shortly, sometime in November, I believe. I got to look up the exact date, but congratulations to this show, I guess, for being around for over a decade soon. Not quite yet, because it did start somewhere around the fall of 2013 as Jane, with an exclamation point, but also called the Jane Show just to, because typing in Jane in all capital letters with an exclamation point, you know, sometimes people didn't pick up that that was the name of the show. They just thought I was saying the name of the boss really loudly. So, and then it was also the Silk and Antrim, and now it's Silk or Joe. So, nice long evolution there. Been in its current iteration for the last 2.5 years. So, not really an anniversary time for me, but oh well, whatever. Anyway, we are on the web, though, so you can check us out. Again, mainstreetradionetwork.com on that website, but also on social media, which pages you can find through Main Street Radio Network, like their Facebook page, for example. You'll see posts about us and from us on occasion. And you will also see us on Wimkin, W-I-M-K-I-N, whenever I can post there, or on Getter, G-E-T-T-R.com, at Silk or Joe Show, whenever I remember to post there as well. Sometimes I can't, because, you know, sometimes things happen. And or I just forget. I freely own the fact that I will forget. Anyway, getting on to the show today. Now, this I don't have guests for the first half of it, unfortunately, for those of you who like them. They ended up all crowded in the second half for some reason when I was booking. I'm not sure why exactly, but I just ended up doing it that way. I kind of got into my head that it was a different arrangement, but whatever. But the second half will be a bit jarring. I'll have two left-wing guests on, and you might hear that I agree with them on some points. Believe it or not, some of them sometimes make good points, and it is oddly possible to be friends with people whose ideology you hate and whose motivations and morality you question. But, in fact, my brother and his wife had a certain debate about that a little bit ago, and, well, you know, it is oddly possible to be friends with people who have points of view that you don't like. But while I attack party leadership, I still rather bluntly believe that their followers are either blind or in on it. I mean, how many Republicans still think that it'll be like the good old days of 2000 if we just got rid of Trump, right? Speaking of people who are blind to things going on. And, you know, I mentioned before my diving into forums and comment sections and leftist news shows and podcasts and social media. And, you know, one thing I see that's quite common in leftists defending their side is that they do it by denying things that their side is doing. But I think they truly believe their side isn't doing the things that they're caught doing. Like how I automatically assume any news agency or any news against politicians I like is fabricated garbage. You know, they'd probably do the same thing too. Except they don't research like I do to see if it's true or false. Although sometimes I don't either. And you've heard me issue corrections on the program before when that happens. But, you know, why should they do any such research, though? You know, they listen to the other side and they hear people like me calling them betaphiles because this show is where I vent. This show is my antacid. I'd probably have ulcers without it. And I'm about to do some venting, too, especially over the next 20 minutes or so. Though the GOP will be in focus for some of this. But my point is that while the left statistically is less likely to want to know anyone outside their political worldview, engagement is still important because even if they don't believe your talking point, it's still in the back of their heads, and sometimes it snowballs as more and more comes out about whatever that topic was. Why, look at the sudden reversal Democrats have on immigration. New York and Illinois' governors demand more border security. The mayor of New York City is right now on a tour in Mexico telling refugees to go home, and they're not wanted in the U.S. I think he called it a discouragement tour. what was racist last year if the GOP had done it is now becoming a valid talking point in Democrat circles. Once we get the I told you so's out of the way, we really shouldn't be so spiteful that we can't try to solve the problem. Like they say, a neoconservative is just a liberal who's been mugged by reality. Now granted, we don't want neoconservative warmongers either, but one step at a time. And like I said last week, even though large chunks of the party are radical nutcases, there's still at least 40% that may be sane. But they just see us as the enemy, so they stick to their side even if it is disagreeable. Alright, I'm done with that garbage. No more Mr. Nice Guy. On with getting mad about what Democrats' leader have done this week. Because, boy, they are having fun with Trump, aren't they? That, at least, though, you know, that judge... I was talking about it last week on the program. That crazy judge and the Attorney General of New York State, who are basically, they're trying to get Trump on it by any means necessary. They are running into a bit of an issue there because the judge actually sided with Trump on something, which was impressive. Because this is the same judge who said that Trump wasn't allowed to present a defense for a certain part of his case, the actually most factually relevant part. Trump wasn't allowed to present a defense as to why his property values were what he said they were. He wasn't allowed to explain anything about it. The judge, who knows nothing about property values, just made a summary judgment. Just said, okay, I don't know dick about what I'm talking about, but you know what? I'm just going to decide that you're guilty based on what the prosecutor said. And that's it. That's all he did. And he certainly doesn't know much about what he's talking about because, like I said, the value that he placed at Trump's property is at least 20 times less than what it should be. And that's why he called Trump a liar, because the judge doesn't know anything about real estate and undervalued a property by 20 times at least, and is just too in the tank for the Democrats to really care that he did such a thing. So then you have the Attorney General of New York, who, you know, bringing every charge she can, including when the statute of limitations had run out. And that's where the judge actually agreed on Trump on something, because, well, at least according to Trump, you know how he likes to hyperbolize, 80% of the charges against him ended up getting thrown out just because statute of limitations had ran out. There's another interesting point about this case, too, that it's just the government going after Trump. None of the banks that Trump went to with these allegedly overvalued property values and all that, none of the banks, loan agencies, anyone has claimed to be injured. It's just the government being vengeful and spiteful because he's Trump. And they unilaterally declared that somebody was hurt, and they unilaterally declared that there is that the properties are worth something that they're not. You know, I guess that the government can technically declare that a property is worth something when it's not, but I think that happens after they seize it from you, not before. So they got the order kind of backwards on this one. But it's a mess, and I don't see Trump getting really... I'm surprised that he even had as fair a trial as he's had with the judge throwing out so many cases that statute of limitations ran off on. I don't know, maybe he... realize that there's only so much he legally could do without Trump tearing away his legal license, because Trump still has money, even though they actually have tried to disband his business. That was one of the things that the judge tried to rule in his summary judgment. But I guess that didn't take right away, or didn't take fast enough, so the judge is running scared, and maybe that's why he allowed the statute of limitations to actually be a valid defense for once, because the judge did not seem inclined to be doing anything else by the book. And isn't that interesting? That's another thing about these left-wing judges. You gotta figure, they don't really do things by the book. They legislate from the bench some often, just make up a law as they go along. And actually, you know, there's something else that's going on too with the jury pool. Now, it's not just in Trump's New York case, but I'm talking about the in D.C., all the January 6th defendants. A lot of them are getting tried before the same juries, like the same people on the jury. Now, obviously that means it's not random selection for these juries, right? Because how many of you get a jury notice at all in your lifetime, and how many of you get one like once every 10 years like I do, right? So suddenly you have these people who are called into court case after case after case after case, right? Even though these are all separate cases. So why is it that we're getting these same juries? Is it because they know that these are the ones who will give a guilty conviction no matter what? And again, this is just left-wing totalitarianism, but bringing back to my point at the start of the segment, you tell this stuff to the average Democrat, you know, one of the 40% who might actually be open to thinking that their side has gone nutso, you know, like that Black Lives Matter chapter leader who sided with the January 6th defendants. You know, he seemed open to the abuses that the legal system is willing to inflict upon its political enemies. So there is hope, at least for that 40%. But, you know, you tell the average one, yeah, have you noticed this pattern here? All these jurors are the same or whatever. They might not believe you at all. They might say, oh, fake it news or whatever. And then they go to their news sources. They don't even report on this stuff. So suddenly you're in this epistemological void where you can't prove to them to their satisfaction because you're using sources they don't believe. Anyway, more Silk or Joe Show coming up after this break.
Chef Quinn Adkins, Culver's Director of Menu Development and creator of the Curter Burger, says it all started as an online prank, but overwhelming support of the fictional menu item changed all that.
Our guests went absolutely crazy for this, and they sent us thousands of letters, and they started an online petition demanding that this be a reality. So who are we to say no to our guests?
Chef Quinn explains what a Curter Burger really is and why it's so popular.
So the Curter Burger is made when we start with a deluxe butter burger, and then we top it with a crown of golden fried cheese curds. So you get that buttery, delicious crunch and that cheesy goodness in every single bite of the sandwich.
You can get your hands on this crowd-pleasing burger between October 2nd and October 31st, or while supplies last. And what better way to celebrate Culver's National Cheese Curd Day on the 15th? Find the restaurant nearest you at culvers.com.
Parents have the opportunity to be that financial role model for their kids. And teens actually tell us that the best way to learn about investing is from their families. So for the parents out there, you might be wondering how. So let me give you three suggestions. So number one, first, have a conversation about investing. Have those money discussions. Talk to your teen about what investing is, why it's important, and how they can get started. So speaking of get started, point number two, help them get access to the tools and education they need to begin their investing journey. For example, the Fidelity Youth App. With the Fidelity Youth App, teens ages 13 through 17 can save, spend, and invest their own money, of course with parental oversight, and they can start investing with as little as a dollar. They have access to a debit card, they can earn money, and there's a ton of free education within the app. And third, and I get it, this can be a tough one, we have to let teens make some money decisions on their own. For more information, download the Fidelity Youth App or visit fidelity.com/youth to learn more.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give him a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve, it's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Josh, everybody. Well, I did promise that I would turn on the Republicans. Don't worry, I'm not turning into a Democrat myself yet, although there's no way I'd actually be one of them. But there is certain issues going on with the GOP that have left me rather royally upset here. And, you know, speaking of being nice to the other side and compromising, let's look at Kevin McCarthy, the late House Speaker. He's not dead, but his role as House Speaker certainly is. Now, he's done a lot of compromising with Democrats as a House Speaker. You see, I was actually almost okay with the shutdown's outcome, the government shutdown's outcome, so long as Ukraine didn't get money, because that meant a small victory at the very least. But then McCarthy compromised on getting money to Ukraine. You could say McCarthy embodies the word compromised. And note that it is that the first thing he did was to get that Ukraine funding. He didn't take advantage of some Democrat governors demanding border security to try and get some border funding. No. First thing he did was try to cut a deal to get Ukraine funding. Basically, the first thing he did was to undo everything the shutdown that he advocated for accomplished, as little as that was. Such a compromising thing he did, and that's where I was happy to let the dogs get him at this point, because he really... The people, the 39% of the population that supported the shutdown and were, well, not supported it, but blamed Democrats for it, you think that 39% is going to be too happy when they realize nothing came out of it? The Democrats still got everything they wanted anyway, and Republicans just clearly did it for a show? Because if McCarthy got his way on that Ukraine funding deal, that's exactly what would have happened. It would have just been a show to make Republicans look tough, while behind the scenes, Republicans were cutting deals and leaving the American people out of it. So, you know, I agree with Matt Gaetz 100% on ousting McCarthy. Now, Gaetz, he might be a jerk or narcissist or have ulterior motives, like getting rid of that House ethics investigation against him. But, you know, I already know at least his staff runs him like a diva. Unfortunately, I do know where this is going, though, as far as who the next House Speaker is. Most likely it will be Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat. He is the current Democrat, he's currently the minority leader in the House. That is, he's the leader of Democrats in the House. Now, how do I come to this conclusion? Because the establishment GOP are a vindictive lot. Remember, they deliberately threw the 2022 election, and I guess the only reason they even went into the shutdown is because Matt Gaetz and his crew were very upset about stuff happening, so they wanted to appease them, but then they decided to go behind their backs and undo everything the shutdown would have accomplished, which, in the long run, would have hurt the GOP. So, they're slimy, vindictive folks. You know, again, they threw 2022 just because the candidates weren't easily controlled by the establishment, and so they didn't want any of them to win. And they continued to refuse to support any investigations on election fraud. Why? Because Trump and the firecracker candidates last year that they abandoned were outside their control. So I keep saying it, the GOP establishment would rather be out of power with a small band of loyalists, rotten and crooked to the core, than be in power and serving the interests of the American people, but with a band of three free agents and independent thinkers. So the result that would best serve this is Hakeem Jeffries as House Speaker, because then the GOP establishment, the worthless, useless, empty suits that frankly you should be able to sue for lying to you in their efforts to get your money into their campaigns, because that's false advertising right there, these scum will say, "Oh, look what happened last time someone challenged our power. The Democrats got the House Speakership even though we had the majority. So you best remain loyal to us at the top and give us all your money, or else we'll let this happen again." And I predict it will happen in this manner. All Democrats will vote for Hakeem Jeffries. That's 212 votes. Democrats march in unison. They are a nationalized party governed from the top down. Individual members have no say and no sway. You follow orders from the ones in charge. Remember, they thought Feinstein was a good senator in her last weeks when all she could do was basically say yes or no on command. They think Fetterman is a great senator, but basically all he can do is say yes or no on command. And Feinstein's replacement literally only knows how to fundraise and say yes or no on command. That's it. That's all there is to being a Democrat in Congress. Just do what you're told. So all 212 votes will go to Jeffries. And at that point, if even 10 Republicans vote present, that means Jeffries will be the Speaker. And you can bet your bottom dollar 10 or more Republicans will vote present. I am curious, though. Undoubtedly, when Jeffrey's in charge, every point of opposition to him will be an act of racism, because remember, 4 years ago, before the pandemic, I talked about this on the show last week, before the summer of riots, before the pandemic, 2019, one-third of Democrats thought criticizing a black Democrat politician was an act of racism. It's safe to say that number has increased since then. Remember, as I said, that only 40% of Democrats seem to be sane these days. So how long will it take the GOP to get numb to accusations of racism? They're very sensitive about it. Remember Congressman Steve King? He was ousted because he allegedly said racist things. He didn't. And actually, remember Congressman Steve Scalise? He's one of the people who's being floated for being the new House Speaker. He had to apologize for something that never happened because he was so terrified of being called a racist. So, and this was, what, 10 years ago that this happened. So with Jeffries in charge, everything will be about race. Will the GOP at least grow a thick skin about that issue? I jest, of course, because they won't. I'm 80% sure that the GOP is actually a subdivision of the DNC. Like, this DNC secretly own the GOP and use it as a Judas goat to herd anyone opposed to Democrats into supporting a do-nothing party that offers no threat to the DNC and does backroom deals to make sure the Democrats get everything they want while getting nothing in return. Now, they would be terrified of a legitimate party challenging them. You know, I'd bet there'd be an assassination if a real challenger ever showed up. Yeah, actually, didn't Trump face such threats? During the BLM riots, Democrats even tried to storm the White House and kill Trump. If you'll recall, in June, you know, that situation where they said that Trump used the National Guard to clear out people from in front of a church for a photo shoot? Actually, the National Guard was used to clear out people trying to storm into the White House and kill him. So, the sort of thing that happens. And don't get too happy with the temporary House Speaker right now, Patrick McHenry. He is making Democrats clean out offices that they probably shouldn't have had for like a year now. Well, not a year, 10 months or so. And so for those of you who don't know what happened, I guess the Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, they were the top two Democrats when the Democrats had the majority in Congress. I guess if you're the top two, you get a special office, extra office space or something. They I think it's called a hideaway office. It's like a glorified closet, I guess. So no one had told, McCarthy hadn't told them to clean it out yet, even though he's been in charge for 9 months and they've been gone. And that space, I guess, is rightfully his as House Speaker now. But he never told them to pack up and clear it out. I guess because they were the true House Speaker and House Majority Leader, the way McCarthy has been governing. Because Matt Gaetz did raise a good point about all the ways McCarthy, not just with the shutdown, but with other issues, caved into Democrats, gave them what they want, and Republicans got nothing except to delay the Democrat agenda slightly, which seems to be all they're good for. Anyway, though, back to this matter. The temporary House Speaker right now, Patrick McHenry, because someone has to be House Speaker while you wait for the new House Speaker, I guess. Now, he's an ally of Kevin McCarthy, and he told, you know, Nancy Pelosi's staff and Steny Hoyer's staff, hey, we're cleaning out those offices now. So I'm assuming that that's just being vindictive right there. He's not doing it just because he's a hardliner or whatever. He's probably just doing it because all those Democrats sided against Kevin McCarthy. It's a little bit of act of revenge. And he'd probably do the same to Matt Gaetz if he could. Because remember, this day, only 8 Republicans voted to oust McCarthy. All the Democrats voted to get rid of him. So this clearly is just the petty act of revenge. So for those of you out there dancing, hey, look, we got a tough guy now. Even with McCarthy gone for 5 seconds, his replacement is acting tough. This seems to be more petty vengeance. The guy is a McCarthy ally. Anyway, more Silk or Joe Show after this break.
Jerome Bettis is an NFL Hall of Famer. While many people know of the bus's accomplishments on the field, few know of his struggles to get on the field in his younger days.
I was diagnosed with asthma at 14, and as an avid athlete, ensuring I wasn't aggravating that condition was critical to my performance. I started learning about different air pollutants and discovered many are found within the home. To test your home air quality, call an AirServe Enabling Company professional. AirServe professionals will go through a discovery stage that discusses issues in the home, such as dry throat, allergies, asthma, headaches, and fatigue. They can then analyze the air in the house. Once the analysis is complete, They will recommend proper indoor air quality products and solutions.
To learn more, go to airserv.com/the bus.
School is back in session. Unwind with the kids at the end of the day with the Nintendo Switch family of systems and games everyone can enjoy. Choose the game system that fits your family, like Nintendo Switch and the Nintendo Switch OLED model, both great for playing on TV and on the go, or Nintendo Switch Lite for handheld mode. Navigate through the dangers of Hyrule in The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom game, or check out the Mario Kart 8 Deluxe Booster Course Pass DLC and race your way through 48 additional courses from the Mario Kart series. Work together to command small plant-like creatures and explore a mysterious planet in the Pikmin 4 game. Or dive into Minecraft. Discover two modes that allow you to build fantastical creations and experience epic adventures. For more, go to Nintendo.com. Full version of game required to use DLC for that game. Additional accessories may be required for multiplayer mode. Game, systems, DLC, and some accessories sold separately.
Rated E to E10+.
A message from MyCataracts.com. September is Healthy Aging Month, and a recent survey led by Alcon, the global leader in eye care, found that cataract surgery gives millions of people the chance to turn back the clock on their vision. Dr. Netta Shammy says the results are compelling.
There are several exciting findings stemming from the Alcon Ion Cataract Survey. Post-cataract surgery, 90% of respondents report better vision, 71% report they have an improvement in quality of life, and about half feel they have the vision of someone younger.
Dr. Shammy performs more than 1,000 cataract surgeries every year and says many people do not know how cataract surgery works or that it can correct your vision.
Cataract surgery is the most frequently performed surgery on earth. The procedure is not painful and involves implanting a permanent lens implant into the eye. Before surgery, a person can choose from several lens options to fit their unique needs.
For treatment options and more information, go to MyCataracts.com.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe here with you all today. And we're about to hopefully pivot to Ukraine in this segment. So we are actually joined right now by someone who wrote an op-ed on the topic. And I really have to call up the guest list because I had the guest list for the Alan Nathan Show up for some reason. I have a very cluttered desktop right now. I need to get rid of it. Some stuff on the list here. But right now we have Robert Wiener. He is Democratic strategist, columnist, and former communications director for Clinton Drug Czar General Barry McCaffrey. Bob, always happy to talk with you. How are you today?
I'm great, Joe. And it's great to be with you no matter which show you are doing. And you are sometimes Alan's terrific alter ego. So this is your Silk or Joe, and hi to Jane.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, I will convey to you or the hello to her. Yeah, that's why it's Silk or okay. Joe Show, because it's just me or her usually. It's not both.
Right.
Except
right.
for, I think twice we did both. So you got an op-ed out here titled, With Zelensky at White House and UN, Biden can propose peace in Ukraine. Tell us a little about this.
Well, this is a tough one for progressives who want to continually support, and it's ironic that they want to support continuing the war. You know, I was a marcher and a demonstrator against Vietnam way back when. So I'm all for peace. But the problem here is that the entire country, except for some in Congress on the Republican side, and that's ironic, want to continue the Ukrainian war, where everyone agrees that Putin is a slime bag who has done horrible things like rape. And in addition to this op-ed on with Zelensky at the White House, Biden can propose peace in Ukraine. We had one on rape as an instrument of war is horrific by the Russians, and what they have done is terrible. And Putin is squeezing the death out of his military by overkilling the role of his soldiers. Fewer and fewer, and tens of thousands are dying. So Putin has an enormous loss on his side that is far more than the Ukraine than anyone thought would be. Ukraine has gone further and further, but this war is going to go on for years and years and years unless both sides do what needs to be done. Both the bottom line, Joseph, is that there's denial in both Kiev and Moscow, but a needed Russia-Ukraine peace deal will not be total victory by either. The number two leader of Ukraine 9 years ago came to the National Press Club, and I asked him, you know, he tried to come in with security and not be asked hard questions and all that. I asked him, what do you do about the fact that the polling shows that in eastern Ukraine and Crimea, people are pro-Russia? They are pro-Russia in eastern Ukraine. And he said, well, polls will say anything, after he hesitated for a while. He didn't want to be asked the question. But that remains the answer. Pew has been doing the polling, and that is the case. Putin knew what he was playing with when he went after Crimea. But he's overkilled. He's overtracked. He has been challenging the sovereignty of all of Ukraine. Conversely, Zelensky is not recognizing that there is support for Russia in eastern Ukraine. What they need to do is to have a conversation, have a peace discussion that doesn't just say don't touch Ukrainian sovereignty, and Putin says we want Ukraine, all of it is ours. Putin has to be willing to settle for some pieces of eastern Ukraine, which he has, and Zelensky has to be willing to allow discussions to go on, but that to remain status quo ante, remain the case. Unless that happens, and I had a conversation with Barry McCaffrey about this, the four-star general. He said your approach is exactly right. That is what ultimately has to happen if they're ever going to get out of this thing. They've got to agree to disagree, but to talk, just like Israel and the PLO have done. So on Sunday, I had a terrific conversation I mentioned to you by email with Jamie Raskin, the Democratic leader of the House Government Operations House Oversight Committee, which I used to be the spokesman of for 6 years under John Conyers. And I told him, you know, he came up to me, and because he knows I write op-eds, he came up to me and started telling me how he's so disappointed that the Ukrainian money didn't get into the stopgap bill. Of course, that's what saved the country. McCarthy lost his career for that, but that is what saved the country, that they were able to compromise. And I said to him, however, that, you know, that Russia is supported in eastern Ukraine, and Zelensky has to recognize that. And I wrote an op-ed saying that. And if Zelensky can recognize that and Putin can agree not to dump on the sovereignty of all of Ukraine, this thing could be solved. And then Raskin changed his tune. He said, well, diplomacy has ended every war. So if you make the case to the leaders of the country, Biden has not gotten there yet. Biden, and there's a problem. The problem is that the military establishment wants the war in Ukraine to continue because they're making tons of money out of the weaponry. And now a number of people have told me that. That is the motivation of the American military establishment. But if we want this thing to end, and I told Raskin, this thing's going to go on for 3 more years unless Biden and Blinken persuade Zelensky, and they say, well, it's up to Ukraine. Yeah, but we spent however much, $150 billion so far on Ukraine spent and committed. So we have every right to say, you can make the decision, but the world is shrinking a bit in its support for ongoing forever without reason here. You've got to be able to function. So that's the purpose of this op-ed, is to get it out there in writing. And some people told me not to write it, Joseph. Don't write this op-ed. You know, we can't say anything that might make it look like we're supporting Russia. We're not supporting Russia. We hate Russia. We hate what they did. But this is a way out for both sides.
Yeah, and it's this everything or nothing mentality that really does not resolve conflicts at all, where if you acknowledge basic realities like Russia isn't going to back down unless they get something out of it, then automatically that makes you pro-Russia. No, that just means you're acknowledging the situation on the ground. And then, but then everyone also forgets history. Like, for the last 500 years, Ukraine was part of Russia, so of course there's going to be people, in fact, there's going to be large swaths of people there who find the Russians popular, but then at the same time, Putin's forgotten the last 30 years with Russia, with Ukrainian independence. So, and then we've all forgotten Eisenhower warning about the military-industrial complex.
You packaged it all together. That's why you are where you are. 90% of Crimeans believe that Russia played a good role in Crimea. 90%, according to Pew poll. 54% said they supported annexation from Russia. So we hate it. Russia's doing horrible things. But the people of Ukraine are looking past Putin and toward their ethnic heritage. And that is the deal that Zelensky fails to recognize. So he's got to do that. What we're talking about could be the path to a peace deal. And but really, Putin to be using rape as a weapon of war. Now people tell me, oh, that's done in military all the time. I don't care. We're going to speak out against it. That's why Stars and Stripes named it the number one op-ed in the country when we wrote that piece. You know, if you embarrass people enough, they actually take action that matters and reverses course. So before we spend billions of dollars more and tens of thousands of lives more, and gee, do I sound like a Republican here? Before we do that, we've got to reconsider the priorities and make sure that there is a path to peace. And I don't see one right now. I see stagnation, and I see us falling into a pit of and a quagmire of ongoing war here. And we absolutely don't want Putin to go expanding his reach to other countries. I fully support the expansion of NATO with Sweden and Finland and Norway and all of that involved and part of it, because Putin does. We've got to be able to put up a block. So this does not include any diminishment or diminution of NATO's power. We've got to keep NATO strong. At the same time, that on this single little microcosmic piece, both sides acknowledge the other's frailties.
Mm-hmm. And you know, speaking of frailties, part of this also has to acknowledge Putin's mentality. And you know, I'm not sure a lot of people like to get into his head because it's a slimy place. But you know, I was talking with a psychologist about him, and he apparently as a child was bullied, and he resolved, I will never be bullied again. And he just became hyper-paranoid about what qualifies as bullying. So if he thinks the West is bullying him to try and get a deal out of him, or, and, you know, trying to get him to surrender without getting anything in return, he's just going to double down. So it's really got to be something that he would find attractive in some way and wouldn't feel like you're trying to take advantage of him.
Well, he came within an eyelash of being deposed 2 months ago. And what's his name, who drove up the street and came right into
Moscow. Yeah, the Wagner Group.
Right. And that almost happened. And that's because the Russian parents and people know the cost of the war in Ukraine to their children. What, does he think he's keeping that from them? Mothers who are missing their kids don't know the kid's gone. So, of course, that's a disaster for him. And there could be an inside job against Putin. There's no question about that. But in the meantime, we're actually giving him a way out if he wants to claim victory and take a chunk of eastern Ukraine. And this is not appeasement, by the way, like it was in Munich. This is not what this is. This is the PLO and Israel talking and continuing to talk. That's what they've got to do to establish a ceasefire. Otherwise, you and I are going to be paying the price, and there's going to be billions more of deficit spending, billions and billions of more of deficit spending, because and the military establishment, as you mentioned, the Eisenhower point, is going to be quite happy about that. But that's not what the American people want.
Yeah, and the military establishment, they should be pretty happy already with all the weapons we're sending over. We're depleting our stocks, so there's got to be some fresh new contracts for them.
Well, what's going on now, and CNN just reported it, is that seized Iranian weapons are going to Ukraine. Biden didn't want to admit it, but you saw that little statement that he made. We're going to figure out ways to work around it. So he's working on it. But that can only carry us so far. That's temporary stuff. He's got to have a structural thing where Zelensky is in a peace deal negotiation. Putin is, Zelensky is, we are, and anybody else who wants to sit at the table can be there. But it's got to be a true peace ceasefire that they agree to respect each other. And Putin may be weakened enough by the Wagner, interference with him. By the way, people don't know that.
Actually,
we got
5 seconds left, so I'm just going to read the name of your op-ed. With Zelensky at White House and Biden and UN, Biden can propose peace in Ukraine. Folks, more Silk Road Show after this break.
For all of society, but in particular, it will have a beneficial impact for small businesses. In fact, a new report by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce looked at the impact of technology on small business. And what we found was that 25% of small businesses are already using AI, with 40% looking to use it in the future. Some of those uses will be marketing and promotions, or helping small businesses communicate with customers and find new customers in the future. We see a 12% jump between businesses that use AI and those that don't in terms of a likelihood of profitability. But when it comes to technology at large, 75% of small businesses say that tech helps them compete with larger companies. It's also important that we get risk-based regulation to help small businesses understand the rules of the road, but help individuals trust this new technology that will benefit us all. If you want to learn more about the work at the U.S. Chamber on Technology or our new Responsible AI Business Leadership Initiative, please visit us at uschamber.com.
Enjoy an ice-cold Coke from Burger King while supporting your community. Coca-Cola is a proud supporter of the Burger King Foundation, which has granted over $60 million in scholarships to over 55,000 scholars, creating brighter futures and positive change in the lives of children and families through education. Now through the end of November, join Burger King in raising funds for the Burger King Foundation's education initiatives and enjoy 3 delicious menu items for just $1. Visit a participating Burger King restaurant and purchase 3 coupons for $1 to help positively impact your community. Each coupon gets you your choice of a free small soft drink or coffee, free small fries or hash browns, and a free small soft serve. All funds raised stay local, right in your zip code. Burger King Foundation scholarships are open to team members and community members, and your dollar makes a difference. So go ahead and have it your way, and know that you're also giving back to your community. Visit your local participating restaurant or www.burgerkingfoundation.org for more information.
We conducted a survey to better understand how generational differences impact attitudes and behaviors around people's money habits. Over 60% of people admitted to making poor decisions when it came to money, and 42% claimed that they were struggling financially.
Some of the most common bad money habits were writing off small purchases as insignificant, gambling, which doesn't necessarily mean casinos as much as it also could mean buying lottery tickets, and using credit cards to pay bills, which can be troublesome, and they contribute to the cycle of debt because they create a pattern of financial instability and reliance on credit to maintain a certain lifestyle or unexpected or unnecessary expenses.
National Debt Relief's mission is to help people, not just with their immediate debt, but also with behavioral change that can contribute to people building a more secure financial future for themselves and their families. You can fill out a form at nationaldebtrelief.com or call us at 800-718-0487 for free consultation.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy, and I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much, from the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between. It really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. We are joined for this last segment here with Egberto Willis. He is political activist and host of Politics Done Right on Pacifica Networks KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm assuming that's somewhere west of the Mississippi. And his latest book is titled It's Worth It: How to Talk to Your Right-Wing Relatives, Friends, and Neighbors. So as you can imagine, he is coming at this from a left-wing perspective. Egberto Willis, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
It's my pleasure to be with you. Thank you so kindly for having me on.
Well, happy to have you. So getting to your book, the title is rather self-evident, but what prompted you to write it?
Well, you know, as I saw the warring factions that we had around, you know, MAGA going against one group of people, and, you know, everybody seemed to be at each other's throats. And the one thing I did know for a fact is that most Americans pretty much want the same thing. So therefore, why are we going through the issues and the consternations that we're going through right now? I figured maybe there is something here. Maybe if we can learn how to talk among each other, we could accomplish quite a bit more. It's something that I, even as a staunch progressive, I've always wanted to do. And I have a couple of stories that I could tell you later on if you're interested.
Oh, certainly, yeah. As long as we can all fit them in within the next 7 minutes or so.
Okay.
But it's rather bad for the public discourse when we end up so divided that we get to the point where, what was it, like pre-Civil War, where one senator caned another one and everyone's cheering him on when he does it, right? So we really don't want to return to that point, but as the divisions grow between us, it seems like we're on our way there.
Well, I think a lot of people would want us to believe that we're on our way there. The thing about it is, like I said before, we share so much in common. Today on my morning show, I had somebody call in, and he said, Egberto, I'm a Republican MAGA, and I like your show, and you and I agree on the Medicare Advantage issue. I am with you, my brother. And I said, you know, man, I love you. Let me tell you something. And there are so many other issues that we're on. Let's start talking about those that we agree on, okay? And he's like, okay, but I'm going to change you a bit too, you know? And I'm like, I don't have a problem changing it. What I'm changing to is something that moves us forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like each side has a monopoly on what's right and righteous. Both sides do make good points on some issues. Now, granted, there are some issues we each find abhorrent in each other, but that's just kind of the nature of humanity. So we just got to work out how to live with some of this stuff, even if we can't in some cases. A lot of it, too, just comes from some of these fringe things end up overblown, but then they end up more overblown just because we each go into our own little camps. You know, what I'm thinking of in particular right now, I keep bringing it up, is the, drag queen story hour issue. Yes, one or two of them have been convicted sex offenders that shouldn't be allowed anywhere near children, but it's like, in most cases, it's just a regular adult who's dressed up as a woman. You know, kids are just seeing it as a clown. There's nothing underhanded going on with it. It's only in specific cases. But then Republicans say, no, it's all cases, and Democrats say, no, it's in no cases. And you just end up on the national stage just taking these opposite extremes that don't reflect reality. And then you're not talking with each other about it, so you're not seeing that neither side is right.
What is interesting, and I'm glad you brought up the drag queen issue. There is a TikToker, I can't remember her name right now, that decided to do a study, and she's doing a monthly study as far as how many people are arrested, convicted, etc., on all these different issues with child molestation that are harming children sexually. And guess what it turned out to be after all the evaluations? She found no cross-dressers that have done any of these crimes based on all reporting since the beginning of this year. She found two trans that have actually committed some sort of a sexual crime, and something like 14 or 15% of all the sexual crimes have been committed by evangelical Christians or pastors, another amount for teachers, another amount for pastors. So a lot of the times, you ever heard the thing that says, be careful when you're pointing fingers, because sometimes reality will actually have the other fingers pointing back at you? A lot of the people that are currently doing that, it turns out that it's the people of their inclination that are doing most of the damage. So we have to be humble when we start thinking about issues like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's also something that gets me. Like, you can talk about the stuff going on in the churches and all that, but also talk about this other stuff. But it's like, because people conflate attacks on these pedophiles in the churches with attacks on religion in general, they might be inclined to defend it. You know, just like how people conflate attacks on the one or two drag queens out there with that are actually registered offenders with attacks on all of them. And then, true, you know, both sides, again, they just take the extremes because I guess that's what makes the news, you know, not reasonable. Oh, this one principal in Colorado or whatever that's a drag queen is also a registered sex offender. No, it's like all of them are.
Right. So exactly. But I mean, as it turns out, I think, and that's one of the purposes of the book. What I try to do is I put out in the sections of the book, put out the progressive mantra, why we believe what we believe, and how we can then go ahead and talk among each other. And the most important thing is I have in the book is that we have to listen to each other and give everybody a place to land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think that's also part of what it contributes to this extremism is, you know, if you don't take the side that at least has part of your belief in it, and the other side doesn't want anything to do with it, or at least you hear that the other side doesn't want anything to do with it, that just makes you more extreme. I think of it like prison gangs, you know? Okay, maybe you're mm-hmm. not a Nazi, or you're not part of the black Muslim group or whatever, and you're not a Latin king, but if you don't join that gang, you're going to get killed.
Absolutely. You have to, and again, you have to give people a place to land. You have to give people, look, even if we don't agree, or even if you come over to my side, we're not going to be the ones saying, I told you so, or anything like that. Give people a place to land. And if they don't land, have some coffee with them up in the air.
The picture of me that I had was just like a table falling down in the midair and like two skydivers having coffee. I like that image there.
So, I love that.
So, yeah, just hope there's a soft place for him to land below that. But where can we get a copy of this book, though? It's Worth It, How to Talk to Your Right-Wing Relatives, Friends, and Neighbors. Because even if you're on the right, it's probably worth a read just to see the mentality of the folks that you're going to be dealing with on the left.
Actually, most of my purchasers are, in fact, on the right, believe it or not. So, I mean, you can go to politicsdoneright.com/books. That is politicsdoneright.com/books. And you can find that book right there. It's really worth the read, both whether you're a progressive or a conservative, a MAGA or whatever, because I think what it shows is it gives us all hope that we can actually get along. And this civil war stuff, there ain't no civil war. We're closer than folks realize.
All right, Alberto Williams, appreciate you being on the Silk Road Joe Show today. Listeners, you can go check them out because we're done with you for the day. Our website, though, is mainstreetradionetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.